The first case this morning is Wheeler versus Barnhart.
Mr. Duncan. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dana Duncan. I'm counsel for the plaintiff, Lori Wheeler. At the time the administrative law judge wrote this decision, Ms. Wheeler was 49 years of age. She had a general education, or a GED, and had past work as a teaching assistant. She alleged disability as of October 3, 1997, due to fibromyalgia, back pain, migraine headaches, and shoulder impingements. In this particular case, the issue rests upon the findings of the administrative law judge in that he found that she could not she did not satisfy step one, which is that she was not able to engage in any substantial gainful activity, that she had severe impairments, which included fibromyalgia, and she did not reach a listing. The issue then rested upon steps four and five. In this particular case, the entire case itself rests upon four significant findings by the court, or by the ALJ. One, that there were few, if any, signs or findings of any significant importance in making a diagnosis of fibromyalgia. Second, that Wheeler was tender to all areas of palpation and not indiscreet trigger points. Third, it is generally accepted that if someone has fibromyalgia, there are discrete, identifiable, tender and trigger points that are crucial in making the diagnosis. Since the claimant did not have those, the diagnosis of fibromyalgia is questionable. The opinion of Dr. Green was also not given weight because it was not consistent with the rest of the medical record. In this particular case, it's important to note that this court's decision in Sargent clearly evidences that the definition of fibromyalgia is a lack of objective medical findings. It should hardly surprise an administrative law judge that there are a few signs or findings of any significant importance in making a diagnosis of fibromyalgia. By definition, fibromyalgia is that it is a finding of exclusion. When all other medical conditions fail, fibromyalgia tends to be the conclusion. Second, by the ALJ's finding that Wheeler lacked areas of indiscrete trigger points, and that there was some question as to that diagnosis, the ALJ has put himself in the position of contradicting the multiple doctors who made findings specifically on the issue of fibromyalgia. With regard to Dr. Green's opinion, the ALJ in this particular case states that Dr. Green's opinion is not consistent with the rest of the claimant's medical record. This court generally upholds discretionary judgments on the record from the administrative law judge. However, using the term of art, building a logical bridge from the facts to the conclusion, in this particular case, we are left to speculate in many ways as to what exactly the ALJ is trying to establish, how Dr. Green's medical record or report is inconsistent with the general record. He notes a couple of minor points, a report that she could walk 1 or 2 miles to Dr. Johnson, and that she could, or yet testified that she could only walk a couple of blocks. And the second point that he raises is the sit and squirm test, which my brief adequately covers. And that was that he found that since she was able to sit for 50 minutes, that her testimony regarding the ability to sit for longer or for only 5 or 10 minutes at a time was inappropriate.
Is that a typical finding that ALJs make during this hearing? Is it like this? Somebody, you know, their observation is that they were sitting for the hearing without any difficulty, and they factor that into their determination?
Your Honor, I generally, in addition to doing the appellate work, I am a general practitioner in the field, so I do approximately 100 to 150 hearings a year, and I'm reviewing those decisions. The number of times I've found...
150 a year you do?
Yes.
You don't have much time to do much else.
No, I don't. But
how long do these hearings take?
Usually about an hour to an hour and a half. I'm doing anywhere, well, for instance, this last August I did 42 hearings. So it takes up a substantial amount of time. But but in those decisions that I've read, the number of times that I've seen a observation like that that's been written into a decision has been only probably a couple. And very few times has that, in my experience, gotten through the appeals council or past the district court.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong, but I just hadn't seen an ALJ base part of a decision on observations of that the ALJ personally made of the being able to sit, for instance.
Correct. Like I said, I have not seen very many of those in any decisions over the last 12 years I've been doing this regularly. So in this particular...
We don't know what the symptoms of fibromyalgia is. How can we tell whether this appellant measures up or not?
Well, Your Honor, Judge Posner
this
writing...
This is kind of a mysterious disease.
Well, Judge Posner writing for this court back in Sargent clearly laid out exactly what is involved with fibromyalgia and what is involved as far as a diagnosis. In that case, he specifically noted... that it is generally a condition that is marked by having multiple, I believe 11 out of 14 noted findings. It's generalized pain that exists over multiple joints and over different areas of the body, ranging from feet to hands to shoulders to hips to neck. It can result in incontinence, irritable bowel syndrome, migraine headaches, and similar type things. Based upon the ALJ's specific findings, I would urge the court to overturn simply because of the fact that in this particular case, the ALJ's decision runs contrary to the general law in regards to fibromyalgia, how credibility is assessed, and how judges or administrative law judges are to apply the law.
What was what was the case you're citing Judge Posner in?
Sargent, just find the exact site. It's 78 Fed 3rd 305. In that particular case, Judge Posner provided multiple specific findings that he made or research he had done on the issue. In fact, I believe I counted that of the circuits, 9 of them have cited Judge Posner's specific decision in Sargent as the leading case on fibromyalgia for Social Security claims. So I will, with due respect to the court, reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Fine. Thank you. Ms. Pedersen?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Danielle Pedersen on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. Opposing counsel has focused a great deal on fibromyalgia this morning, and so I'll start off with my focus there as well. The important thing to note here is that the ALJ did note that there was an absence of the type of clinical objective findings that are typically associated with fibromyalgia. Now, opposing counsel will have you believe that the ALJ was talking about things like reduced range of motion or abnormal sensation or things along those lines. That's not what the ALJ was talking about. The ALJ was talking about the base criteria we look at when diagnosing fibromyalgia, and that is the existence of 11 out of 18 of these very discrete trigger points throughout various parts of the body. And I have referenced the fibromyalgia trigger point map website in my brief. The ALJ, not playing doctor, but rather relying on the specific findings and opinion of a consultative physician, Dr. Johnson, noted that Ms. Wheeler was not exhibiting these very specific trigger points of tenderness. She was simply tender all over. She was, in the words of one physician, jumping even when he was just lightly brushing her skin. She was showing extreme sensitivity to even the lightest touch. And the ALJ properly juxtaposed that, based on Dr. Johnson's opinion and his findings, with what we normally see in a fibromyalgia case. Now, this case has not come down to whether or not we accept the diagnosis of fibromyalgia. The ALJ found that fibromyalgia was a severe impairment. The issue is whether the fibromyalgia was disabling. And this court has addressed fibromyalgia in many other cases besides Sargent, most notably in Eastock and Sarche. And in both of those cases, this court noted that fibromyalgia is typically not disabling. It's fairly unusual for it to completely disable an individual. And more importantly, in Eastock, what this court noted was that despite the fact that fibromyalgia is this very unusual and difficult to diagnose condition, we still have the Social Security Act, we still have the regulations, and this court acknowledged it must follow those regulations in determining whether or not someone is disabled. And that requires a physician and the claimant to come forward with objective medical evidence to support an opinion of disability. And that is what the ALJ found was lacking when weighing the disability opinions of Dr. Green. Now, opposing counsel didn't spend a lot of time on Dr. Green's opinions this morning, but I would like to. Dr. Green is a physician who treated Ms. Wheeler for a period of time, about a year and a half, and then after an 8-month gap where there was no treatment whatsoever, she had not treated her for 8 months, she suddenly comes forward with this opinion that she could never lift, that she could only reach for an hour a day, and that she would have pain that often interfered with her ability to concentrate. But there's two important things to note about that opinion. First, she specifically said, my visits with this person focused on her depression, not her fibromyalgia, not her physical condition. She's putting some limitations on her own opinions. She also specifically said, I am not in the position to assess her ability to sit, stand, and walk. I just didn't do the type of physical exam that would be necessary for me to render that opinion. So she withheld that opinion. Interestingly, however, 3 months later, still with no intervening treatment, Dr. Green suddenly decides that she will come forward and say she can only sit for 5 minutes, she can only stand for 15 minutes, she'd be limited to part-time work. But she put another condition on that opinion. At the end, she specifically said, these opinions are not fact-based. These opinions are not fact-based. I did not perform the type of clinical exam necessary. I did not send her for a functional capacity evaluation. And she put that condition on her own opinions. The ALJ reasonably looked at that and said, look, Dr. Green was not even comfortable assessing many of these areas. She conceded that her treatment focused on the mental, and she specifically indicated that her opinions were not fact-based. And this court has held that where a treating physician's opinion is seen to be based largely on the claimant's subjective complaints rather than objective medical findings, that it would be appropriate for the ALJ to give that opinion little or no weight. The ALJ also considered the evidence of record. And again, just because we have a diagnosis of fibromyalgia does not mean we throw the objective evidence out the window. It's still important to look at things like, how well is this individual able to move about? Can she get on and off the examination table? Can she stand? Can she stand on one foot? Can she walk on heels and toes? How is her gait? These are the kinds of things that all the physicians that saw her noted to be normal. Again, these are the types of things that all the physicians that examined her noted to be normal. Ms. Wheeler was moving about pain-free without any difficulty, and this was repeatedly noted in the record. Again, it was appropriate for the ALJ to contrast that observation and those observations with these allegations of severe disabling pain. The ALJ properly weighed Dr. Green's opinion. He provided sufficient reasons for the weight he was giving that opinion, and we believe that he gave this court sufficient information to trace the path of his reasoning, and we ask you to uphold his rejection of that opinion. The credibility is the other issue that Ms. Wheeler raises in her brief on appeal. Again, something that came up this morning is this idea of a sit and squirm test, and the ALJ did, again, contrast Ms. Wheeler's statement that she could only sit for a very short period of time. In fact, Dr. Green said she couldn't sit for more than 5 minutes at a time, with the fact that she did sit, again, apparently pain-free, throughout a 50-minute hearing. Now, the ALJ didn't rely exclusively on that. That wasn't the only thing the ALJ considered. And as the district court noted in its decision, this court has not shied away from allowing ALJs to make personal observations at the hearing and to use those personal observations in their credibility findings. In fact, most recently in Powers, this court noted that. And it was appropriate for the ALJ. Again, that's why we give the ALJ's credibility findings such deference. That's why this court has decided that those findings are entitled to deference, because the ALJ has a unique opportunity to actually witness this person and to see them there sitting in the room, to see how they move about, to see how easily they get in and out of their chair. They are in a unique position that we and this court are not, to look at this person and make a determination how credible their statements are about how much pain they're in. And it was therefore appropriate for the ALJ to consider this as one factor among many. The other factors the ALJ considered were, again, conflicts in the record about the length of time she could walk. Claimant characterizes Dr. Neil Johnson's observation that, or note that plaintiff told him she could walk for 1 or 2 miles. Ms. Wheeler says that was probably a mistake or an error. Again, counsel was present at the hearing. This record is very thin, and that record was there. Counsel and Ms. Wheeler had the opportunity to object to that record and say that it was an error. Nobody said anything about it. The ALJ had that record in front of him, and he was entitled to rely on that opinion and that observation, and to contrast that with what plaintiff was saying at the hearing. The ALJ also noted, again, the absence of the type of evidence we would see in a disabling fibromyalgia case, again, that those exquisite tender points at the very specific locations that are noted on the map on the website. And that was something that no physician found. Dr. Green did not perform, although she did opine that Ms. Wheeler met the American rheumatology criteria for fibromyalgia. You'll look at her records carefully and see at no time did she conduct the kind of clinical examination that would allow her to make such a determination. No physician did. No physician made such an exam except Dr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson did perform that examination and specifically said, look, this woman's tender all over. She's exquisitely tender wherever I touch her. I cannot find, he said, any of these particular tender points that I would use to diagnose fibromyalgia. And he therefore said that he was skeptical as to that diagnosis. The ALJ did discuss the treatment history, which again is filled with gaps in this case. There are many, many gaps in treatment. In fact, interestingly, although when Ms. Wheeler first saw Dr. Green, who's an osteopath, and she performed osteopathic manipulation, Ms. Wheeler reported great improvement after that, and yet she waited 9 months to go back and see Dr. Green again rather than seeing her the following month as Dr. Green instructed. I'm sure that Ms. Wheeler will attempt to paint this as being something that was having to do with finances, and yet she was able to get treatment from Dr. Green. She saw her for a year and a half, so she obviously had the finances to see Dr. Green when she felt it was necessary. But she herself admits that she went through periods of time where she experienced no pain. She had pain-free periods. She told several doctors that. And these gaps in treatment are not a couple months. They're 8 months, 10 months, 12 months. So the credibility finding is sufficiently articulated. The ALJ properly rejected Dr. Green's opinions, and we would ask you to affirm the commissioner's decision that Ms. Wheeler was not disabled.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Mr. Duncan.
Thank you. Well, the commissioner would like you to believe that the issue of pain all over is some sort of telltale sign that this condition is not as bad as it was appeared. I would cite the court specifically to page 308 of Judge Posner's decision in Sargent, and that is, I quote, the principal symptoms are pain all over, fatigue, disturbed sleep, stiffness, and the only symptom that discriminates between it and other diseases of rheumatic character, multiple tender points, more precisely 18 fixed locations on the body, that when pressed firmly cause the patient to flinch. So even Judge Posner in his research, which is quite lengthy, specifically notes pain all over. The commissioner wants us to believe that the ALJ in this particular case can find fibromyalgia and yet find that there isn't sufficient evidence to believe my client's credibility. As I note in my brief, the ALJ is obligated to at least give some consideration to the Social Security ruling in this particular case, 96-7P, something that he only barely addresses by mentioning it, never goes through the elements involved. The commission also wants to use this term, not based on facts, to render a doctor's medical opinion moot. In this particular case, by the commissioner's argument, Dr. Green would have been obligated to have a functional capacity evaluation done before rendering a decision, and that specifically has been found to not be necessary pursuant to Barrett versus Barnhart, where it's recommended but not required. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. Move to